Coming to you live from the kingdom of Everrealm, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who is wearing a glowing green necklace. Oh no, what does it mean? Rob Cesternino, hello everybody, and welcome back to our continuing coverage of The Quest. Episodes, what, is this 9 and 10, Kurt?
Sure, yes.
We don't know.
Last count.
There's 2 hours left, and this is the final 2 hours before the last 2 hours here. And Kurt, we are going to break it all down. How is my favorite paladin doing?
I'm still got my piece of the sun spear. So I did a peace check before I sat down to record, and it's still with me.
Always got to do a peace check before you sit down.
Yep.
And so as long as everything is good, then we can talk about the latest edition of The Quest, and it was a night where it was really turning into a battle of the men versus the women, and the women are starting to fall off down to our one woman standing in Lena.
I was waiting for you to do a Giles impression. I could sense that was coming.
Yes. Bonnie and Letitia are out, and only Lena is left and three bros.
Yep.
Okay, Kurt. So what'd you think? Is the 2 hours of The Quest still working for you?
I would prefer to space it out a little bit more.
Yes.
It's a lot of Quest. I actually had to, I think I did Quest, Big Brother Quest, last night. Had to have a little Julie Chen palate cleanser in between.
The 2 hour reality shows are tough for me. I'll be honest. There's not many that I podcast about that it's 2 hours, and I don't know if I have the mark of attention span. I don't know if I'm going to be getting that anytime soon. But, we'll talk about the 2 hour block of The Quest. And maybe, we get a little punch drunk by the end of talking about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yes. But, some people said they had a lot of fun with our podcast last week. So hopefully we are on the right path with covering The Quest.
Yes.
Yes. So thank you guys, everybody who made it through and are sticking with The Quest all the way until the end. Next Thursday night will be the 2 hour finale. Luckily for The Quest, it is not going up against Big Brother anymore on Thursday nights. Big Brother moves to Wednesday to accommodate Thursday night football. So that is your only reality game in town for The Quest finale. All right. Kurt, do you have a pick for, out of this final four, who will be the one true hero?
Although I'm a big Patrick fan, I have a feeling it's going to be Andrew or Shondo.
Yes.
I actually might lean a little bit more towards Shondo. There's some interesting editing going on, pitting Bonnie's perspective in the game versus Andrew's perspective. And Bonnie saying how, we're still all in this together. We're still trying to save the kingdom. And it's great that we all pitch in at these different points. And Andrew's taking this perspective of, this is an individual game. We have to do this on our own. And I'm thinking that the story that the producers would want to tell is not the Andrew perspective, that you do need to be a hero that can work with others at this point in the game still. So maybe it won't be Andrew. So maybe I'm leaning a little more towards Shondo.
For me, it's Shondo or GTFO.
Okay.
So that's the one satisfying conclusion for me would be to have Shondo go all the way to the end.
Because he's the one person that has not actually been in the Fates Challenge yet, out of everybody.
Yes, and so that would be very, very fun for me to see Shondo be the one true hero of Everrealm. I think he's the only guy that could get the job done.
Yeah, yeah, he could step into the Pentagon and get matters handled.
Now, is that a Pentagon or an Octagon?
Well, I think he's normally used to the Octagon, but I think we saw that there was a lot of confusion between those two this week.
Yes, that's right. How many sides are on that? Okay. Sorry, Kurt, for blowing your shape joke with an inferior shape joke.
Wah, wah.
Thank you. I do not get the mark of humor today. Sorry, you get it. You get it, Kurt.
Yes.
Anyway, so, all right, let's talk about this and what happened where the paladins end up on the run after an attack from Verlox. Okay, let's start with Verlox. Kurt, did you think Verlox looked cool? We talked about last week the ogre. I said I did not think the ogre looked that cool. What about Verlox?
I was impressed by Verlox.
Yes, I would agree. I thought Verlox looked cool.
I have my notes. He's a badass.
Looks cool.
And I liked the visual effect of him cracking the building. And I don't know if that was a physical effect that had been built in, or I've seen some like very realistic looking basically projection effects on buildings that almost make it look like a building's transforming. I was like with an HD with like a real high def projector that could have also been handled that way. Mm. But I kind of liked the he comes in, he stays at a distance, he puts his hand on the pillar, and the entire building cracks. It was a fun effect to see, and if it was actually that's what it looked like in person, that would have been, I think, even more badass. So, yeah, a thumbs up to Verlox the Darkness.
Okay, so Verlox was pretty cool. He comes in, he starts to attack Everrealm. Everybody's like, we got to get out of here. And so the paladins...
Which way was Shondo heading, do you think?
I don't know.
Was there another Shondo warning at that point? Was he going to charge Verlox?
I think so. And they're like, no, Shondo, come this way. All right. So everybody goes and tries to like get into like the catacombs like to escape. However, when they are on their way out, everybody runs into the Vizier, and it's like, hey, what are you doing, Vizier? Funny meeting you, Vizier.
I'm going to hang on to that mark. I don't think I actually would have noticed anything if it hadn't been pointed out to us.
Yes.
It seemed like everybody was fleeing, and if this was the official royal escape route, it didn't really necessarily not make sense to me that he would be there. So, but the paladins did seem to find it suspicious.
Everybody was a lot of throwing shade at the Vizier tonight.
I liked how when they were all entering, Ansgar stops and he has his moment with the Vizier. It's like, you know, well met. And then, you know, Creo has his moment with the Vizier. There's like a 2-second pause, like, you know, be safe. And I was hoping that would happen progressively with every single paladin as well. I thought that would have actually been really hilarious. But no, they just kind of like filed in, and they're in these underground catacombs for an undetermined amount of time.
Yeah. And Shondo has his eyebrow raised about the Vizier. He says, he smells a snake in the grass.
Yes.
Now, is that how you detect a snake in the grass? You smell them?
I think it's a lot safer than, I guess if the snake is just eaten, maybe you could smell something.
What smells worse, Kurt, a snake in the grass or a dragon's egg?
My guess would be a dragon's egg. You can touch a snake in the grass. Dragon's eggs, apparently toxic is one of the adjectives used to describe them.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so everybody is going to go run for it, and they're sort of like hanging out in the catacombs and, you know, let's stay here until daylight. But before that, the Vizier gives the queen a necklace and says, oh, queen. And this is what really makes everybody very suspicious.
Yeah. Wear this tracking amulet. I mean, wear this.
Yeah. I have a necklace that's going to make you safe. Now, what kind of necklace is this that will protect her? Is this like sort of like the necklace that we got my grandmother where if she falls down in the house, that it will contact the paladins and let them know that she's fallen?
Like Med Alert or Life Alert or something?
Help, I've fallen. and there's no paladins around. And I can't reach my scorpion.
We're sending a paladin to you right away, Miss Relia.
Yes. Yes. Or maybe it contacts the fates.
Yeah.
Automatically. It just brings you directly into the fates. So wear this necklace, Your Majesty.
Very suspicious. And like I've said on the previous podcast, I'm not sure which way to go with the Vizier. If, you know, again, is it the... they're trying to tell the most straightforward narrative and he's your stereotypical villain and that's how it pans out? Or is it so obvious that it can't be true? And I don't know which way to go on this. Because right now, everything's pointing to him. And if this is supposed to be a mystery, then it's not going to be him. But if it's supposed to be a standard fairy tale fantasy trope, then it is going to be him. So I still don't know what to think. It seems too obvious.
It's very interesting because it would be such a curveball for it to not be the Vizier at this point.
And it would have to be Ansgar or Creo at that point, right?
Yes. And I could see it being Creo. I don't think it would be Ansgar.
There was some little things, now I feel like we're talking again about whodunit, but there's some little things in how Creo was acting at the end of the second episode that made me wonder, like, what's there something going on here? But yeah, she's got this amulet of protection.
The amulet of protection. And the queen doesn't really ask any questions. Like, oh, thank you, Vizier. I appreciate you thinking of me. She doesn't like, really? What does it do? What does it protect me from? Like, no. Verlox, he can't get you if you wear the necklace. It's the immunity necklace. And if you're wearing it, then Verlox can't vote you out. Like, okay, well, let's put this on.
I mean, narrative-wise, we have to remember, these two have probably been working together, the Vizier and the Queen, for quite a while. So for him to suddenly... So there's probably experiences and instances of a lot of trust having actually built up over the years. So maybe it wouldn't necessarily make sense for her to suddenly start questioning him. If they do have a long... This might be the sort of thing he does all the time.
Your Majesty, I implore you to wear this necklace. It will keep you safe. It's called the Power of Veto.
Yes.
Yes, it will keep you off the block this week. Verlox is HOH. He's just taken over the HOH castle. We got to get out of here. All right. So we are going to be on the run. And I thought this was kind of fun and different that everybody was sort of like on the run and hiding and going through the catacombs and then sneaking away. It was definitely different than what we're used to seeing on an average episode of The Quest.
Yeah, we're finally out of Castle Sanctum, and this is the sort of thing, we got a little bit of this in episode 3 where they left and they entered the woods to talk to the hag, and I was glad we finally got some of this, because I got the sense that we're not going to have any training challenges.
Oh, but that's where you'd be mistaken, Kurt.
No, I don't think, we didn't though. We did not, that's the thing, is that the challenges that we had were all integral parts of the plot. Like, it wasn't just them practicing getting the flags up for the challenge that we'll get to, but it was literally, they had to convey a message across the, visually across the land. They had to get it right.
Yeah. Now, I felt like that they lost any sense of an urgency with them competing against each other to complete the task.
The way that I interpreted it was, the moment that one team won, they had to immediately help the other team do it because they were conveying two different messages. Both messages had to be conveyed. It just happened the team that finished first got the quote-unquote immunity, but both messages had to be conveyed. And that's one of the things I liked about the set of episodes today, is that in both challenges, that was kind of the structure. In the flag structure, once one team finished the flags, the other team, they had to go help the other team and make sure that they got it right because both messages had to be conveyed. And the same with the closing the gates on the dragon's den, is that the moment that, yeah, you guys won, but you have to close all the gates because we can't let the dragon escape and all the gates need to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that I liked about this, is that it wasn't training, and the challenges were set up in a way that did, to me, seem built into the narrative of the story. Here's something that needs to happen. We're just going to be able to position it as a challenge. But even once a team wins, this task still needs to be accomplished even by the losing team due to the narrative of the story that we're telling.
That's fair. For me, it was sort of like that they were on the run and they went to some place that had like a challenge set up as opposed to actually engaging in whatever is going on. So it's like, really, we're still in doing like training exercises. It's almost like, if this was a war, we're now out on the battlefield, but now we're going to still do a training exercise in the middle of this and have to, like, if they really were trying to get everything done as fast as possible, like, why not have Ansgard do these things? Like, why?
Oh, yeah, I think, for instance, the flag challenge, there could have been quicker ways to do it, but I did think the way that they positioned it to us is, like, these flags were being raised purposely for the purpose of conveying a message across the distance.
So before we quite get to the flag challenge, Ansgar has everybody like duck down. They see one of the people from Verlox's army. They see like a bunch of them, and they're like in hiding. And I thought this was kind of cool when they have to wait for the whole people, the scout team that's looking for them to go by, and then they're able to run through.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And like we hadn't really seen them interacting with the enemy that directly yet. I mean, that's up to this point, it had been a lot of training exercises or watching Ansgar fight an ogre. This is really one of the first times they actually saw the enemy up close and were trying to be stealthy about it. That was kind of cool.
Okay, so ultimately they get to the place where they need to go to make up these messages, and so they have these two different messages. Kurt, do we find out what the messages say?
You know what? That's an interesting point. I didn't care what the messages said, which is maybe a break in what we're supposed to be thinking about the show. I was at that point, my mind shifted from the story to the challenge, which is one of the weird things about the quest is that that dichotomy. So I'm not quite sure what was being said. I remember at one point looking and seeing the words, but I wasn't paying attention to the entirety of the message.
Okay, so we don't know quite what the message was saying, but it was probably very important.
Yeah, I think send help, yada yada yada.
Yeah, do not wear a necklace.
Yes.
So when we do the challenge, there are two different strategies that come into play, and it ends up being the men versus the women. And now I thought this was kind of a good idea for it to play out this way because it wasn't anything that was super physical. Did you think that the women were going to have an advantage in this challenge?
Not as much as Shondo seemed to think they would. He seemed to be saying that, colors and patterns, this is right up the women's, right up their alley. And I'm like, not quite sure why that would be. But I didn't think that they necessarily had an advantage. If anything, I thought Patrick had an advantage as being a teacher and being able to instruct and advise and look for a logical way to convey something. I don't know what Bonnie does. I know because Patrick and Bonnie were the ones that were up there reading the message and trying to convey what flag had to be selected. And I thought that actually was a good pick for Patrick to do.
I liked how everybody had to use a megaphone.
Yeah.
I did like that. Okay, so bring the... go ahead and bring the octagon over here. How was it? Did they really need those? How far away were they?
I think it was quite a distance away. and they do work. It's just a cone to project. But at the same time, I don't know if it could have been so far away that you couldn't see because they were holding the people putting the flags on the little device were holding them up for Bonnie and Patrick to see. And they could clearly see the shapes and the patterns and say if it was right or not. So okay.
Now, should we suspect the paladins? Because we've been trying to uncover this mystery of we're looking for people right now who are sneaking around in the woods behind the Big Brother house saying things like, Frankie is bad. Derek is a cop. Could it be the paladins that are the ones sneaking into the Big Brother backyard and saying, yelling these things over the fence?
Victoria is the darkness.
<It's>, Victoria is Verlax. That's her new name. So I don't know.
The quest will have started and ended while they were in the house, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it will.
Okay. The vizier is the saboteur.
There's a dragon flying
Shondo,
over the
banner. Shondo is Everrealm's player.
Dragon flying with a banner over the house.
House guest, go inside.
Go back to the castle.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So, Team Everrealm has another task. Should they A... go ahead and get Ansgar to wear a dress for an hour. Okay. All right. So when everybody goes ahead and they do the task, it seems like there was the difficulty with one shape in particular, Kurt.
Yes.
Yes. The pentagon.
Yes.
And they were sort of interchanging it with the word pentagram also,
yeah,
which is something different.
It's like a, I think a pentagram is just a star in a equilateral five-sided shape.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, they're close. They're both associated with five sides. So that's not a huge deal. It was more the octagon, which is three more sides than you're looking for this particular task.
Yes. And so a little bit of a miscommunication, and ultimately the men's team wins the task.
Right. And I think one of the big keys there was Patrick's decision to get Andrew up to the top and to get him down, because that way you now have, he knows what specific flags he's looking for because he's been up there staring at the message and the corresponding flags. So he can now go down, get up close, look for the right flag. And at the same time, Andrew can come back and say, oh, wait, that's what he's describing. That's the wrong flag. So I think that swap, and even Bonnie points this out later, that swap that they did was one of their keys to winning.
Okay, so Patrick gets the mark of intelligence.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Patrick for that, because he's a big guy, and that was very exciting for him to get the mark of intelligence.
Yeah, except this reminded me of some of those guided survivor challenges we see where you have one person calling and the other people trying to do something, except there weren't nearly as many groin shots.
Yes. You wanted more people to get hit in the... I was going to come up with a euphemism. Get hit in the paladins. Is that what you want?
Yes. Not enough sun spears remained undamaged.
Undamaged. Okay. So after the challenge was over and then the men helped the women complete their task, we know who is going to go into the Fates challenge. So we have to now go back to running. And again, I felt like, you know, there seemed to be no urgency during the challenge to get it done fast. But then once the challenge is over, like, come on, hurry, they're coming. You know, we got to get back on the move.
Yeah, it was, they had to get the message right. I mean, you can't rush that. You can't communicate the wrong thing.
Right. But if we were having the appearance of we need to get this done as fast as possible, you would think Ansgar would like, no, you're saying Pentagon, and yeah, it's not a Pentagon.
That's true.
Yes. So, you know, it's like either we're in a big hurry or we're not in a big hurry.
This was, you're right. They had to stop and take their time with this one. That took us out of the narrative a little bit.
Yeah. All right. But we're back in it. We're back in it. We're not going to let that take us out.
Yes. Now we're back.
So we go running and then we have to build a shelter to hide them from the scouting parties.
Were you thinking the same thing I was thinking when this happened?
Oh, but this is like Survivor?
That this is the Spy Shack.
This is the Spy Shack. Oh.
Yes. They had to build a Spy Shack to hide in later on.
Look.
To listen when scouts come around.
We need to put up a shack in the middle of the woods because then Verlox, he's going to come and get us. And so if anybody finds out what my job is, don't say I'm a paladin. I'm a humble hut builder.
Yeah, it was meant to spy on any of Verlox's, because they weren't building it to go to right then. It wasn't supposed to be a shelter, but it was something they could go in and do some reconnaissance later on if they needed to. And I was like, you know, they got the Spy Shack idea from Tony. We got some Survivor fans on the show.
I think so. Kurt, this seemed like this was busy work for me to the Paladins, because this isn't really where they camped. It was just like, oh, okay, we need an activity. We need to build a makeshift hideout.
Yeah, but I mean, they needed a place from which to spy on Verlox's troops as they were in the area. And I think that's what the purpose of this was. It literally was a spy shack of the purpose of it. But at the same time, I think that it probably would have gotten done faster if Ansgar had stayed there. I think he just kind of, he went off to quote unquote scout. He was probably just, grabbing a cigarette somewhere off in the woods
and just
came back. Yeah, this is his break. Exactly. His union.
All right, so meanwhile, Kurt, when they are putting up the shelter, the paladins they're still talking about what's going on, and they're still, you know, suspicious about the vizier, right?
That's really the only attitude you can have toward viziers, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
He wouldn't be doing his job if they weren't suspicious of him.
Okay, so Ansgar comes back, and he's impressed with what they did, right?
Yeah.
He thinks this was good work. Okay.
No, again, it could have been like an amazing race task where it's like, that is, no, must rebuild it again.
Yeah, pencils down. Okay, so now we go to meet up with the guys on the front lines. And so there's already a camp. Now, who are these people that are fighting for Everrealm?
I guess they're just the Royal Guard? the soldiers of Sanctum? Because we knew there were front lines. So probably a assemblage of a ragtag group of local farmers who basically come together to form a militia in times of need.
Yeah. Okay. So they're all just hanging out. Lena is playing with a giant hammer. I don't really know what that hammer was for.
I got the impression it was to like drive the stakes into the ground for the tents.
Yeah.
So they could go glamping. Those are pretty nice tents.
What'd you say? They're going to go what? Glamping?
Glamping. Yeah. Glamorous camping. You ever heard of glamping?
I have not heard of glamping.
It's like camping for people who don't want to actually get away from the wilds. And
wow. I think I might be into that.
Yeah, I've never done it, but it looks pretty comfy from the pictures I've seen.
Okay. And again, as everybody is hanging out, a lot of people saying, like, boy, that vizier.
Yeah.
See, it seems like the paladins really only have one thing that they talk about.
The vizier.
The vizier. Like, boy, that vizier. I don't know about that guy. I don't know about that guy. Is anybody saying, like, he didn't seem that bad to me?
If they are, then the narrators who put together what we see are not allowing us to see that. They definitely want, and that's the thing, because the narrative very much seems to want us to be looking at the vizier with a raised eyebrow, I'm not sure if we're supposed to be looking at him with a raised eyebrow.
Ooh.
I never trust.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like the paladins actually don't have that many things to talk about. I feel like it's either, boy, that vizier, I don't trust that guy as far as I could throw him. Or, boy, Sir Ansgar is pretty awesome. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Or wasn't Sir Ansgar mean to Creo?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? You're right. That's an interesting thing. I was thinking about that. Is the paladins seem to be being swept along in the narrative. And apart from, I don't feel that I know each of these people as well-rounded characters, because I feel I know them as paladins, and they're, as individuals, they're largely, I hate to say it, a little bit interchangeable, except for their relations with each other.
Yeah.
Like, there's no strategy really to talk about or debate about that we see.
Well, this is a good exercise. Let's do this. I'm going to name people. Let's come up with how many things we know about these characters through, how many episodes is this?
I think we said, I think this is like 7 and 8.
Okay. Shondo.
Cage Fighter.
Yes.
Good one-liners.
Yes. Looking for the dubs.
Looking for the dubs.
Yes. Anything else? And he's friends with, he likes Letitia, right?
He likes Letitia, but he's perceived as nobody knows how he's going to vote. Shondo's going to vote how Shondo's going to vote.
Yes. And so he's a wild card.
Right. And the thing is, like, their old backgrounds and who they were in their earthbound life aren't really supposed to come into play here. So maybe that's part of it. But anyway.
Okay. And Shondo's probably the guy we have the best feel for. Tell me about Andrew.
Andrew, personal trainer / wrestler, ADHD.
Okay.
And was friends with and roommates with Christian.
Okay.
That looks at is looking at this as an individual game.
Yeah, I got nothing else on Andrew.
Right, very, you know, high energy. Seems like a good drinking buddy.
Okay.
He's kind of the Colby Donaldson to Jeff Probst in terms of Ansgar's Jeff Probst. I think there's like a society of mutual admiration there.
Okay, and then Bonnie, we know a lot about Bonnie. She's friends with Patrick. She makes songs.
Yep. She's a little bit of the underdog with the big heart.
Yes.
She's done, able to perform under pressure. She's done well in several of the Fates challenges in Fate Club.
Okay. So I guess we can know a little bit, but I feel like as compared to like, you know, a Survivor or a Big Brother,
Lena, she comes from an Italian family.
Very attractive, Lena.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it's not the fault of any of the contestants. I think it's just the way that the story is structured is they're characters in the narrative, and there's not a lot of opportunity for them to express truly who they are. Except I think in some of the, like even in some of the instances where they're interacting with Ansgar during training, it's almost a little bit like drill sergeantry, where you're supposed to almost being stripped of who you are, and they're trying to all become a model paladin. So that I think you lose a little bit of the character differentiation there. You'll really only see it maybe when they're talking about what's going to happen at the upcoming Fates Challenge.
Yeah. I think maybe it's just that there's not that many like character scenes like that we call them on Survivor or Big Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we don't really learn a lot about the actual character of these people.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Which may or may not be a goal of the show too. I mean, that it might not be what they're trying to do with the quest, and then that's perfectly okay.
All right, so after another round of beating up on the poor vizier, I hope he's innocent after all of this. I feel like, hey, in Everrealm, I thought you are innocent until proven guilty. And he's already being hanged in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if the, our earthly laws apply to Everrealm.
I'm going to stand up for the vizier. I'm going to be the one guy that says, hey, he's a good guy. The best vizier we've ever had.
I keep forgetting, he looks a lot like Jeffrey from Opposite Worlds if you added 30 years to him.
Jafry, I believe.
Jafry.
Jafry.
Add on 30 years to Fry, and you've got the vizier. It's both in looks and the way people perceive him. Future job opportunity for Fry.
Oh, my God. Who would have thought we'd have a Jafry reference in all the way into the quest? All right. So, time to go and see the Fates.
Okay.
And now some people were saying, like, wait, hold on. I thought we're on the run. What's going on? How are we getting to the Fates?
I was saying that too.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
Is it magical? Does it travel around like a magical thing that travels around? I mean, I was also wondering and they didn't try to address that at all in the narrative.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a big issue with this.
Okay. I was just like, well, maybe it's just nearby.
And a deep cut from reality TV here. One show that did this really well that I don't think anybody listening to this probably saw was back in 2009 on the CW was a show called 13 Fear is Real. And it was basically each episode was almost the cast of contestants living through a different horror movie trope. So one episode, the challenge would be in an abandoned school. And then they had a competition there. Very much like, and then the losers of the competition have to go to the final challenge, very much like the structure of this show. And then and there, the final challenge was at the school. And then they might have another episode at the school, but then they'd go to an abandoned fort. And so it kind of traveled like a cabin in the woods. And so the challenges traveled along with them as they traveled along. And that's what I was kind of hoping would start to happen with the Fate Club here, in that if they're on the run, then the Fates appear to have the challenge in the context of the narrative, somewhere wherever they're at. And it actually took me a little bit out of the narrative when we saw them just appear at that same place as usual.
Yeah. Did, on Whodunit, when they had the episode where they went to the stables, did they go back to the mansion for the scared and spared cards?
No, they had it around the campfire at the stables.
Yes. All right. So
that was the one. Yeah, that was the one where there were three people who had scared cards, I believe.
Yeah, but then I think they all went back by the end of the episode for like the kickoff of the next episode.
Yeah, they spent the night. I don't know. I don't think they slept out near the stables, but they had like a campfire there. But they were with. I think they slept in their own rooms the next time.
Okay. All right, so here's what's going to happen. So go up and hide up in the tree, and then we've got word that the Vertlok's army is coming through, and then there's going to be a quiz on what they're doing.
Right, and again, I did like this a lot better than many of the previous Fates challenges, because again, for me, this was another example of the challenge being directly in the context of the story we're being told. It wasn't, for no apparent reason, nail these horseshoes to this wheel or balance these measurement things or hit these, skeet shooting skulls with a sword. It was like, there's a patrol coming through. We need to know what's being done. And so you do this. I mean, it's a little weird that they would make it a challenge and not have everybody do it, like if it was truly in the story. But it was nice that for me that the challenge lined up with what was going on in the story and what needed to be done.
All right. Well, yada, yada, yada. You know, it was okay for me.
Yeah, it was, I think, it wasn't the best. So that's what I'm saying. I like that structure of the challenges are taking place and being woven into the story. Unlike previous challenges, the actual challenge itself was a little, for me, weak when we're down to the fourth episode from the end.
Yeah, I think that memory challenges need to be done really well on reality TV, where if I can't play along at home, then I think it's not a great thing to do on TV. And I feel like the questions were sort of just like, yeah, they just got the quiz. We didn't really even know what too many of the questions were. And then they were just, you know, filled out the quiz. And then we found out who got the most answers right.
It was a little like The Mole in terms of, we don't necessarily we can't necessarily answer all of the questions on The Mole. Like we might not, for instance, what was this person wearing when they sat down to breakfast? We might not have seen the breakfast scene. But compare it to the wire cutting challenge on Big Brother this past week, where I know that I was playing along at home when they were flashing the wires on the screen and then they asked the question. And yeah, I think you got that. You have it completely right. The memory challenges are a lot more fun if you can play along at home.
Yeah, I think Dalton Ross has talked a lot about this on Survivor also, where it's like, you know, if they give us a sequence, we're trying to remember it or, you know, something like that. I think that's more fun than just, okay, now they're taking a quiz. But the long story short is that Bonnie got 7 right.
Right. I did like her in context rationale of, if she wasn't sure of a number, she was going to guess on the high side so that Hans Gar and his company would be over-prepared.
Yes.
I did kind of like that.
That was good thinking.
Yeah.
Yes. Then nobody's going to sneak through on Bonnie's watch.
There we go.
All right. So ultimately, it's going to be Letitia versus Lena, and we have to decide who is going to get saved. And Shondo says Letitia has proven herself, but Bonnie says, but Lena has heart. It's much more important to have heart, I think, on the quest than to be a good warrior.
Yeah, we're still getting a nice mix of team challenges versus individual challenges. So nobody can, you can't necessarily approach this. If it was always a team challenge, you'd potentially want to get rid of the weakest person. If it was a individual challenge, you'd potentially want to get rid of the strongest person. The fact that they're still kind of varying that up is kind of nice in terms of why people would rationalize voting in different ways.
Okay. And so, you know, hey, almost time to fight Verlox. Who do we want to keep around? Should we keep around the person who's the, you know, tough or person with heart? I think heart.
Yeah.
All right. So everybody stands behind Lena.
And given that last week, Letitia was the one saying that nobody should turn around and see nobody standing behind them. I felt really actually kind of bad for her when that happened.
Yeah, she's like, nobody should ever have to turn around and not have anybody standing behind them. And it's like, well, you just got Christianed.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't even... Yeah, she stood behind him.
Yeah, and that can't be an accident in the editing. I mean, that had to have been done on purpose. But I thought that was a nice edit. That was masterfully done from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah. It almost seems like they were trying to make her upset.
I don't. The people who voted?
Yes.
You think they were trying to make her upset?
By not standing behind her.
I don't know.
Maybe they knew that was her thing of that. No, everybody's got to have somebody stand behind her. Like, oh, we'll show Letitia.
Yeah, I think it was Andrew. You think, yeah, but would. At that point, is everybody standing behind Lena? Does the last person stand behind Letitia? No.
Like, was that a sanctioned thing that Letitia did?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, we don't know to what extent people agree how they're going to vote before they leave the round table. We hear a lot of the discussion, but we don't know if like the last thing is said is Patrick saying, you know, so we're all agreed we're going to stand behind Lena. And, you know, at that point, somebody might, maybe Letitia was vocally saying before, I'll be the one person to stand behind somebody if you guys are cool with that. So I don't know if that had ever been discussed or not. It's just something she did.
Okay. Anyway, so Lena is the person that's saved, and so Shondo never wants to go back to the Fates Challenge because he always wants to keep the Fates in his challenge.
Okay.
I don't know. He wants to keep his own fate in his own hands.
There we go. Go for it.
Okay. Well,
whatever.
All right. So here is the queen. She's back.
Yeah, she showed up to camp.
Yeah. Hey, guys, what's happening? And like, oh, the queen is here. And of course, you know, the queen is quite a jinx. Terrible luck for the queen. You know, really, wherever she goes, you know, calamity follows.
She's like a car curse on legs.
Yeah, I don't know. She's like the cooler or, you know, everything that happens around her, always bad stuff. And so I thought it was kind of a soft ending to the first hour where it was like, oh, it was a big noise, but we didn't get to see what the noise was. Thankfully, we didn't have to wait a week, only a couple minutes, because it was a cool reveal.
The dragon.
Yes, the dragon. And so we'll talk about what happened in the second hour of the quest. But first, Kurt, I just want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. Those are our friends over at Hulu Plus. And by the way, if you miss any episodes of the quest, you can check those out on Hulu.com. But we're talking about what's something that's even better, which is Hulu Plus. And with Hulu Plus, you can watch all sorts of shows on your schedule on a number of devices, because Hulu Plus, Kurt, has the current season episodes of all of your favorite shows, including one of your favorites, Kurt, Once Upon a Time.
Yes, Once Upon a Time. Currently in the middle of binge watching that. So thank you, Hulu Plus.
All right, and you can check Kurt out hosting the Once Upon a Time post-show recap on postshowrecaps.com. You could also see shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Saturday Night Live. Plus, you could see the entire catalog of shows like Community and South Park and many of the back catalog seasons of Survivor, because Hulu Plus works on your computer, smart TV, Roku, Apple TV, Xbox, pretty much any streaming device that you could own. And also, you could watch on your phone, your tablet, on the train, at work, when you're on the road from Verlox, at the dentist, or even in the bathroom, Kurt.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're not involved in the Fates Challenge, you gotta kick back and wait for these people to do their sentry duty. You know, take out a little Hulu Plus there.
Yes. Do you ever watch Once Upon a Time on the go, Kurt?
I have actually watched it on my iPad at the gym when I'm doing cardio.
Oh, yeah, very
no
good.
Lie. Yeah, yeah. You had 66 episodes to get through in a month. You have to watch them when you can.
Look at you. You're like Shondo.
Yeah, there we go.
Right, you could even block off a whole day just to binge, because with Hulu Plus, you're in total control to stream these and thousands more as much as you want, whenever you want. And you'll also get access to original series that you can't get anywhere else. You could see last summer's breakout hit Quick Draw, a fully improvised, outrageous comedy set in the Wild West. You could see season 1 or season 2 available on Hulu Plus. It's only $7.99 a month. Get your shows anytime, anywhere. Right now, I'm offering the listeners a 2-week free trial when you go to HuluPlus.com/Rob. That's a whole extra week for free, Kurt. Please make sure you use HuluPlus.com to get your extended free trial, and they know that we sent you. It helps support the podcast, and you get a better deal. One more time for the extended free trial. That's HuluPlus.com/Rob. If you're a vizier, though, this deal does not apply to you. We don't want only for nice people that are helping out the people of EverRealm.
You've already, you know, executed him, and he hasn't even gone to trial.
All right, fine. Even if you're a vizier, come on in. All right. All right. So hour two of the quest, here we go. And we see a dragon. What? Oh, no.
Yeah, it's EverRealm, of course. Dragons.
Dragons?
Yes.
Are these Verlox's dragons?
You know what? Maybe that was something I missed. I didn't necessarily associate the dragon attack with Verlox or the dragon being in league with Verlox. I wouldn't put it past him. But this seemed like an isolated dragon attack. It was attacking an outpost. Who knows? If I missed that, then, you know, shame on me. I thought this was an isolated incident.
Yeah, I mean, is it just like when it rains, it pours in Everrealm? That you got Vrilox attacking and then dragons attacking. And Kurt, what exactly happened? How did the dragon get out?
Well, actually, no, that's what I said. Vrilox, if I had just read like to the next bullet in my notes, Vrilox released the dragon from its lair. It attacked the outpost at Asper, and then a good number of the villagers fled into the woods. When it began to destroy this outpost. So actually, yes, Vrilox was involved. He did release the dragon from its lair.
Okay, so there is a dragon that's like chained up somewhere or just like in some sort of a lair, and then Verlox's forces came in and then they just let it go and just let it run rampant just to mess with everybody?
Yeah, it was almost as if this lair had like these five gates that sealed it, and I'm thinking maybe they got opened.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a good theory.
Yeah, we'll test that out.
Okay. Anyway, so everybody is very concerned about the dragon. And so the queen, luckily, is safe. And yeah. So we're now going to start to the next day, figure out how to get the dragon back in. So what happens? So the dragon then, after it attacked, then it went back in the lair, but the doors are still open?
Yeah, well, it doesn't have like the opposable thumbs to be able to maneuver all of those complicated systems.
Yeah, but you would think once your dragon gets out, you would think it would not go back into its cage, right?
Well, that's unless you know how to train your dragon.
Yes,
I know there's a couple instructional videos somewhere that you can watch about that. But apparently, it sleeps during the daylight, and it has to. Apparently, it is a nocturnal dragon. It's like think of it as like a big bat, so it's always going to return to its lair at night.
Okay, so it feels more comfortable in its lair.
Yes.
Okay, so we need to get the chains moving, and we need to close those gates and keep that dragon locked up.
Yeah, apparently when Vrilox's forces dismantled the ratchet system, they put them into these nice bags.
Yeah, they put them into bags and put them up by the tree so the next person could come along and put it back together. It's a good thing Vrilox didn't just rip it open.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I mean, if you're Vrilox and you are taking over this kingdom, you don't want to maybe have the dragon running around permanently.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to open it now, I'm going to stash the ratchet system nearby so we can close it once we've really taken over all 12 kingdoms.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the rationale there.
He's but not they, chaos Vrilox.
No.
He just wants, you know, some shenanigans, and then once he takes over, then he needs to be able to get the dragon back into its cage.
Right. I mean, as far as he knows, the queen and all of her paladins are somewhere near the castle. He doesn't know that they're out near the dragon anyway.
Okay. So everybody is, you know, racing to get their thing made. And it's sort of a two-horse race between Shondo and Andrew, and Lena and Bonnie are really struggling.
Yeah, Patrick seems to be potentially in the running for a moment, but yeah, the fact that Lena didn't grab all the bags and just didn't have all the pieces to put it together was not going to help her.
Yes.
yeah. You know, and I really like Bonnie's perspective was she was looking, they get to this metal plate and there's all of these, you know, bolts coming out of it. They have to take those wing nuts off of. And she was looking at it as a puzzle, like literally, how can these different pieces fit in here in a way that makes sense versus looking at it as a mechanical device where this part has to have a chain on it, so it has to go at the front, which is probably, I would have probably approached it the same way she did it initially, where, you know, you're not approaching it as a real problem, you're approaching it purely as a puzzle, and how can these pieces fit on there?
Yeah.
So that thought that was, I mean, it seemed like it was a legitimately how this device would be logically set up. You didn't have to think about it as a puzzle as much as just a device.
All right. So luckily they get everything straightened out, and the guys that finished went ahead and they helped the bottom three. And so it's Patrick and it's Lena and it's Bonnie who are the last people to get their side of the cage locked up. And thankfully there weren't six parts of the cage that were open. Luckily it worked out good.
Yeah. Well, they probably would have gotten to that eventually, but it was nice that there were just the right number of firebombs in last week's episode to get down to three paladins, and now this one there's just the right number of gates for all five paladins, and there are 12 pieces of the Sun Spear and 12 kingdoms, so It was like it was meant to be. It was fate.
It was fates.
Yes.
It was fates. Okay, so Creo comes back and is like, oh, I don't feel safe around here. Ah! Well, what is Creo's deal? I feel like he's completely useless at this point. I don't even understand why Creo is still on the show. He's just like a... They love Sir Ansgar. Creo is just like this dead weight that they're lugging around.
Well, if it wasn't for Creo, Ansgar would have given up on the quest. I mean, they left the castle in the first part of the 2 hours last night, and it was Creo that started talking about courage is continuing to do what you don't think you can do or something. And if he hadn't stepped in and convinced Ansgar that they know they have to continue the quest, then we wouldn't be anywhere. Then the Sanctum would be lost without Creo.
All right, fine. We can keep Creo.
And Creo is the only person that knows about the fates, apparently, because we find out later that this is the first time that the Queen and Ansgar has ever been to Fate Club. And like Creo, they said, Creo, how did you find this? And so this is kind of Creo's deal, is the whole fates thing. Ansgar doesn't have a connection to the fates.
All right, so finally, you know, when Creo and Ansgar show up later in the day, everybody starts asking, like, hey, where's the vizier? Don't you think it's weird that the vizier, you never see him? And they're like, why don't you ever see him outside the castle? Yeah, what's that guy's deal? And Ansgar's like, you, this is high treason, what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, if it was like Bonnie or Lena. So I don't want to get that. I get that. We're just saying. What if?
What if, hypothetically, what if that happened? Okay.
I wonder, is what if a good way to get out of treason?
Yeah, I was like, I was just asking a question. Like, I wasn't saying. I was playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then we are going to get the news that there are dragon's eggs, Kurt.
Yes, which means baby dragons.
Baby dragons, and these dragon eggs need to be handled very delicately.
Yes.
Okay. What did you think about the three dragon eggs in the hall?
It suffered for me a little bit. I like the idea that they tried to build the narrative around this, where we have to get the dragon's eggs. You can't touch them. Okay, so this is our challenge. I mean, surely, and then yes, there would have been more practical ways to do it, but they at least tried to build it into a story as opposed to it being the horseshoe task. But it suffered a little bit for me like the cage running challenge a couple weeks ago, in that there wasn't enough light. I couldn't tell what was going on. It seemed very clunky. It was really hard for me to follow visually what was going on, except for the narration of people telling us that they were almost at the top or they were halfway up or what they were doing. I couldn't see a lot. To be able to truly grasp what was going on.
Yes. And so it was a little difficult. And the dragon's egg, of course, Kurt, everybody knows that if you touch a dragon's egg, it will burn your skin.
Yeah, it's toxic.
Yeah, it's very toxic.
It's the Britney Spears of the eggs in the fantasy realm.
Yeah, now I wasn't exactly sure. Why couldn't they just get like that big hammer and just smash all the dragon eggs?
Maybe there's like a good, value for, I don't know.
Do they need to be recycled?
I think so. It's just like, your disused cell phones and laptops and the batteries, and they have to be carefully recycled somewhere.
Okay. Well, Patrick seems like he figures out the idea of how to get the thing up, and it's between him and Lena, right?
Yeah. But Lena, yes. He's the only one that doesn't actually drop the egg, and like Lena gets about halfway up and her egg kind of falls a good deal. And then Bonnie gets almost to the top and then her egg falls a good deal. So it seemed like his was the only egg that, at least in the editing, it didn't fall at all. So it seemed like he had a clear path to victory here.
Yeah. Okay. So he gets his up and then he helps everybody else get their egg out. And then I didn't really understand why a net had to be thrown over the egg.
So you could carry it.
I guess
that was just it.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
All right.
And then you think if they have a net, they would have gloves so they could pick up the egg. But never mind.
And then they drag the eggs away on horse. You would think that if they go over some rocky terrain, those eggs are going to crack, right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem a good idea to be dragging the eggs.
There you go.
There we go.
That's why you have the mark of humor.
I think I just lost it.
Okay, no, you got it. You got it still. All right, so when we get through that, so Patrick is going to be safe. Now, they have to decide between Bonnie and Lena, and they're going to go see the Fates again. The Queen wants to come to the Fates.
Yeah, when they showed up to Fate Club, I think the way it worked was like, you know, that we have dragon eggs, and Creo was like, well, the Fates will know what to do, and that's why, you know, the Ansgar and the Queen made their first trip to Fate Club with the gang of paladins this time. So yeah, this is their first time there.
Okay, so everybody's there, and so they have to make a decision between Lena and Bonnie, and the three guys are talking. I thought this was really weird, Kurt. When the three guys walk away, one of the guys says to the other guys, it was either Andrew or Patrick, said, you smell great.
I think that they were talking, I think someone said that to Patrick, because supposedly the dragon pits, or the pits that the dragons were in, were like, were supposedly smelling really, really rank.
Okay, so
there was a small comment about that when, but like, Bonnie first got into the pit, and so apparently no one was smelling like sunshine and roses afterwards.
Facetious.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Lady Patrick was smelling great.
All right. So after that discussion, it's time to pick who they're going to save. We know Patrick is going to save Bonnie, but Shonda's a wild card. We're not sure what Andrew is going to do, but Shonda and Andrew are going to vote together. And they're going to vote to keep Lena.
Yeah. I would have gotten rid of her just because she kept saying swords earlier in the episode. Her and Letitia. I could not get over that. There were 17 swords. I'm like, ugh. Sorry.
All right. So, Kurt, very sad now.
S-words. Sorry. Yes.
We're going to lose Bonnie.
Yeah. Yeah. The Queen seemed to miss her later, too. we wanted more songs. We wanted more singing and bard-like behavior. And I have to say, I mean, I was rooting for Bonnie. I was sad to see her go. She's had a much better track record at Fate Club than Lena has.
Yes.
I wondered if anybody was going to bring that up. But yeah, she is gone. So
I got to be honest. I like Bonnie.
Yeah,
never said a bad word about Bonnie.
But
I felt like that this was the tribute to Bonnie was, I felt like, a bit much. Like, Bonnie, to my knowledge, is not deceased. And I felt like it was an extended montage for somebody from the quest.
It definitely was longer than usual. And there was even like I said, when they got back to camp, the Queen was was talking about missing Bonnie and hoping that she could have sang her a song, and they can't sing another song without Bonnie, and they wouldn't do it justice. And it was, and maybe she was like kind of a crowd favorite there,
I guess, apparently, but because they really paid tribute to Bonnie.
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe she comes back for the quest All-Stars.
I guess so. I mean, like, Big Brother, Survivor, all the other shows, people that are, huge parts of the show go out and they don't make a meal out of it like the tribute to Bonnie.
Yeah, not on the show. Sometimes in social media after the show, like Bonnie.
Yes.
Donnie had a big to-do, but it wasn't so much on the show as much as it was like online and everything. But two crowd favorites gone so close to each other.
Now, what did you think when they go back and sit with the Queen for a little bit? And Lena is cold, and the Queen gives her coat to Lena.
For somebody that would living in Everrealm, they would probably be shocked by this. I don't think I would even notice it until they pointed out and made a big deal about it. But good. It just, the Queen is a woman of the people. She's comfortable and doesn't stand on ceremony.
Okay. Well, she's a woman of the people. That is right, Kurt. And so the Queen is sitting there and she's like, boy, I wish Bonnie was here. I wish Bonnie could sing that song again. How did it go? They're like, oh no, we couldn't do it justice. And they're like, well, they'll be singing it for hundreds of years, for sure. And then it's a little depressing though. They're like, will it be for hundreds of years? Because, if Verlox takes over, we're not going to get to hear Bonnie's song anymore.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's very sad. And so anyway, they are going to, you know, turn in, and Creo's going to take the first watch.
Yes. By himself.
By himself.
Always pair up on watches.
Yeah, that's ideal. And so the queen is going to bed, and they're showing us shots of the queen getting ready to sleep. I'm like, okay, this is the part where the queen dies.
I was waiting for that too. But before she goes to bed, we had another holla.
Oh, yes. Holla.
Holla,
Creo.
Shondo brings one of the 5,000 hollas into Everrealm. So that's one less that Derek has to deal with.
Yeah. Shondo says to Creo, hey, if you need anything, just holla. And Creo's like, what? I don't understand. He's like, oh, yeah, give me a holla. Like, let me know if you need something. He's like, oh, okay.
I will give a holla.
Holla.
He does a little hand gesture, like mimicking Shondo. I like that moment.
Yes. Okay, so Creo is sleeping. Something has walked into the camp. Worst watch ever. We see Ansgar on his, like, in night vision. He looks like, is he sleeping or is he dead?
I think he laid down, like, so Creo was supposed to be staying awake and staying on watch. And then maybe like 15 feet away, Ansgar, just to be close to the action in case something happened, had laid down a blanket and was just kind of resting there. It was one of those, if you hear or see anything, just wake me. I'm right over here. Which is hard for Creo to do because he nodded off.
Yeah. If you see something, say something.
Exactly. See something, say something.
Okay. But if you're sleeping, you can't see anything.
Yeah, unfortunately, no. We found that out.
All right. So what do we think is going to happen next?
I have no reason to... So we see that the amulet on the queen starts glowing green. It gets activated. We don't know if it's beckoning this thing from the woods to her, or if it's reacting to its presence and potentially going to protect her. We don't know which way this is going to go yet. And I'm wondering if... I'm wondering if it causes her to, like, go into a trance and leave the camp, and then people wake up and don't know where the queen is at. I'm wondering if that's what it causes her to do.
I hope that it is something where now that monster or whatever comes into her room, and then the power of Vito then, like, shoots a laser and kills it. And then everybody would be like, oh, Vizier, oh my God, thank you. That was such a good idea to put the necklace on the queen.
Yeah.
You saved the day. Well, thank you. All in a day's work.
Yeah.
Excellent job, Vizier.
That could very well be it.
We'll see. It's all going to wrap up in 1 week on the 2-hour finale of The Quest.
Yeah, we're almost there. We're down to, and it looks like it's two distinct episodes. So I'm guessing if it was literally like a one episode that was 2 hours long, I'd question, you know, what's the format? Because I believe it's set up as two back-to-back 1-hour episodes, we're going to have out of the four remaining paladins, three will go into the Fates Challenge, and then two will vote. And then in the final episode, we have a final three. And
how will we decide the final paladin? Will there be a jury? Will they come back from the hologram and then decide? Or will we have one final face-off a la Opposite Worlds?
I have no idea. Maybe it's all three go into combat with Brolocs and two die. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand how we're going to, like, I understand, like, all these training missions, but at some point, don't we actually have to fight Brolocs? And I'm not sure how that's going to actually unfold.
I have a feeling that one true hero is going to enter an arena with Brolocs, and he's going to have this sun spear that is just going to do all the work for the one true hero, which I'm fine with. And we've seen other shows like Whodunit and Opposite Worlds where we don't know how the end game is going to play. I'm actually fine with it here because it is more of that narrative story. We don't see a lot of people strategizing to try to get the, you know, $500,000 or whatever. The way that the quest has been set up, I'm actually okay going into the finale not knowing necessarily how it's going to work.
Okay. All right. Well, we will see it all unfold next Thursday night on ABC, the finale of season one of The Quest. Who will be the first ever one true hero, Kurt?
Prediction wise?
Yes.
I'm going to, I think I'm gonna stay with what we picked. I'm gonna go Shondo.
Give me Shondo. All right, yes. But let's take Shondo off the board. Who's your second pick?
Okay, Shondo off the board. I am going to go Patrick.
Patrick. Ooh. Yeah. I think they will go with Lena.
I feel like Anthony and Lena, or Andrew and Lena, are a little bit interchangeable in my mind. So maybe they cancel each other out. Shondo sacrifices himself in second place, and then Patrick wins.
Okay. All right. So, Kurt, do you have a hashtag for people who are this obsessed with the quest to not only watch a 2-hour episode of the quest, but to also listen to a 1-hour plus recap of the quest? They can tell us that we are simpatico and we are all in this together.
You know what? Let's go back to Paladin Glamping.
Paladin Glamping. There you go. So use that hashtag on Twitter and let myself and Kurt Clark know that you made it this far into the show. Kurt is at Kurt Clark on Twitter. I am at Rob Cesternino. Kurt, in addition to the quest and the previously aforementioned Once Upon a Time, what else are you working on in the Rob as a Podcast network?
The big thing right now is we are toward the end of Big Brother UK, or Celebrity Big Brother UK.
How's Gary Busey doing?
Gary Busey's doing well. The crowd seems to love him. He actually may be the first American to ever win Celebrity Big Brother UK. So we're wrapping that up. The finale for that is next weekend. On Monday, we're actually going to kick off coverage of Big Brother Australia. Going to go down under for that one and cover the launch night of that. You mentioned Once Upon a Time, and then there's also a little show called Utopia that's coming up.
Yes. Okay, so this is the big news. A lot of people have been asking about this. Kurt and I are going to cover the premiere of Utopia on Sunday night. I'm not sure where the Utopia Weekly podcast is going to come in, but we are going to talk about it certainly on Sunday night. And then we will see where it goes from there. I'm going to be a little non-committal about this because I want to make sure that we like it. And if it's not a show that we're in love with, I don't necessarily want to commit to it weekly.
Yeah, well, let's dip our toes in the utopian waters and see where it takes us.
Yeah, if this was the summer and there was nothing else on, I'd say 100%, well, we're going to follow Utopia the whole way through. But we got Survivor coming back. We got Amazing Race coming back. We got a lot of stuff going on. So Utopia has to impress me. But we will talk about the premiere no matter what this upcoming Sunday.
Yep, that should be fun.
All right, Kurt, thanks so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you soon. Our next live show is going to be this Sunday night talking about Big Brother and what is going to happen with the house guests on Sunday night, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope to see you there. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.